Josh, are you there?
Yeah. Gary's okay. Poking my
face. Whoa.
With his finger.
Whoa. That's highly controversial. Okay.
Welcome to episode 191 of the PC Gamer Podcast for September 10th, 2009. This is your host, Logan Decker, and like you, I believe it's time we talked less about healthcare, war, carbon taxes, horny senators from Orange County, and Lady Gaga, and more about the thing that makes freedom worth fighting for, PC gaming. Joining me today are reviews editor Dan Stapleton.
The time for bickering is over.
Previews editor Evan Lottie.
Penny Arcade gave me cholera.
Former intern and now editor, World of Warcraft, the magazine, which was recently launched here in Future US in cooperation with Blizzard, Josh Augustine.
Why, hello.
Plus, we've got podcast producer Andy Bauman.
Hi, guys.
And returning to the podcast this week is the tiny squirrel that doesn't speak. Now, one thing I want to jump on right away is Evan's special report from PAX, because frankly, I don't know how long he has to live. As you may have heard, there was a swine flu outbreak at PAX, and Evan came back looking like one of the Left 4 Dead characters who didn't have a speaking part. How are you feeling today, Evan?
Oh, I think I'm running about like 75% efficiency, but...
I'm impressed that you did drag yourself into the office, despite the horror with which you were regarded when you came in.
I've got to push through that. That's right. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was kind of funny that you claimed it was cholera initially, especially since I just looked cholera up on Wikipedia since you mentioned it, and under here, like the first thing under transmission, it says people infected with cholera suffer acute diarrhea. This highly liquid diarrhea, colloquially referred to as rice water stool, is loaded with bacteria that can infect water used by other people. So, yeah.
Okay, so
you know what, Dan? That is gotcha journalism.
I hope that was, yes. But I hope it was not cholera, because I'm sitting way too close to Evan.
I'm gonna go ahead and say it was another Gold Rush era disease, like tuberculosis or the typhoid. Yeah.
Dude, I'm totally regretting that bro hug that we had.
It was a good one.
I know, but now that I'm gonna get sick from it.
Are you?
Evan, you'll warn me if you're gonna suffer from some rice water. Because I'm in the blast radius here. I'm just warn me.
Oh my god, time to bring back the video podcast.
I just want 10 to 15 yes. seconds to clear the area.
Oh, nice.
It's what the flip minnow was invented for. Rice water.
You've been tagged in this video on Facebook. For that matter, so is Dan Stapleton.
I think we fit a new low in record time. Congratulations.
Yes, absolutely.
Congratulations. So, yeah, PAX.
So I don't know how much longer you've got. So tell us about PAX.
Well, first of all, it was a much more comfortable show aside from, you know, the outbreaks.
Yeah.
And because they had more space, they had an extra floor, and all the PC tournament area was up there. I got to play in the TF2 tournament, and our team got in the top 8 out of 32, so that was cool. Really fun. Always good to be in a LAN event, seeing a lot of hardcore PC gamers doing their thing. But as for the show floor itself, a lot of people were excited about Diablo 3. It was playable there, just like at BlizzCon. I wasn't expecting them to have as big of a presence because of BlizzCon, but they did. I mean, they had StarCraft 2 Versus there. They had Cataclysm playable. So that was great. I think the one thing that sticks out about Diablo 3 is just the new enemy mechanics. They showed this desert wasteland environment, which is sort of teased in the Monk trailer, if you saw that. And you have enemies that are like sort of these locust enemies that are shooting smaller locusts at you. You have enemies that are spitting acid. You have this whirling dervish enemy that sort of spins around like a tornado and knocks you back. It's just a lot more happening on screen, and the enemies give a lot of cool visual feedback. What else? I got to play the part of the Dark Carnival Left 4 Dead 2 level, which was interesting. I think what sticks out to me about it is there's a lot more openness to the levels. I mean, kind of the hallmark of the Left 4 Dead 1 levels was lots of long corridors, alleyways, and in this case, I mean, I was playing with a pretty experienced group of people that I actually knew and had played the game before with, and we got lost two or three times in the there's all these sort of identical looking carnival stands, and there's carousels and things like that. Yeah, you have to run around.
Maybe it's just me and my terrible sense of direction, but I got lost a lot in the original Left 4 Dead before I figured out what was what until I played through it a couple times.
Sure. I think there's... I mean, it's definitely part of that, but I think there's a few more like movement mechanics or transitioning between segments of the level, if I can call it that. There's almost this... And the one thing that did stuck out to me that I liked was there was one particular area that had a nice use of vertical space where you're on this cliff and there's a rocks and there's sort of these terraces on their way down, and you have to position yourself to land in each part of the terrace as you fall down, almost like a platform game. And within the carnival, there's this giant slide, and you actually start to slip down it. Like there's a within the physics system, you sort of lose your footing a little bit when you stand on it. So that was cool. And I heard them talking about there might be sort of hidden carnival games or something like very modest within that space.
You win, like, you were talking about zombie.
Sorry, what'd you say? I didn't hear you. Sorry.
I just said you win a little stuffed zombie if you win the carnival game.
Yeah, something like that.
Awesome.
But you were talking earlier about the jockey zombie that was unveiled at the show.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, that's really the main thing that was revealed, I guess. And we also got to see the spitter in action. The spitter kind of seems like a boomer to me, in my opinion. It's sort of a means for controlling like a bottleneck more than anything else. That's the way it stuck out to me. Basically, the spitter, spits, obviously, this pool of like very, very, radioactive neon green fluid, and it sits in an area, and if people walk over, they get damaged and probably slowed a bit. And but the jockey, on the surface, the mechanic is sort of like the hunter. We didn't get to play as the infected, so we don't know the details on that. But basically, the jockey hops on somebody's head, and that person proceeds to run the hell away from you, sort of haphazardly, and almost
run away from his team.
Right? Yeah, run away from his team, like in this sort of haphazard position. He can't control himself, but he can sort of. We're playing on the 360 with the jockey, unfortunately, but you had to sort of mash buttons to sort of limit the effectiveness of the jockey, and you had to basically chase that person down and go out of your way to just immediately shoot him off. And it was a cool mechanic. And Chet from Valve was talking about how it's really satisfying to hop on somebody's head and have them just run off a cliff and die. Things like that. So it should be a good addition.
When the jockey's on your teammate, how difficult is it to shoot the jockey as opposed to accidentally shooting your teammate?
It's tough. I mean, they're basically taking up their shoulder space, right? Like their head and shoulder space.
Yeah.
So, and when they're moving, I mean, they're not moving in a straight line. That's really the toughest part of it. They're meandering and weaving. So it's tough for sure. And they take, a couple hits at medium range.
So it's hunter like, but a variation on the hunter, because the hunter just tackles you and you're on the ground stationary, and I guess that the tactics would be different, because the hunter wants to get somebody when he's just isolated from the rest of his team, and the more isolated he is, the better off the hunter is. And that's, I guess, that would be true of the jockey as well, except you also want to be thinking about where your victim is going to run when you pounce on him, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's another way of, I'd like to think, getting people out in any situation where they can clump together in a corner, right? Because if a jockey, if four of you are in a corner and it hops on one of your teammates' heads and you don't get rid of it immediately, then you're going to have to chase that person down and save them, basically.
Although that's kind of the same as a smoker, right? Although I guess you can shoot the tongue on the smoker. And he's got a more limited range, I guess.
Yeah, and the difference is, with the smoker, they're eventually going to stop, probably within 5 seconds, usually. Otherwise, I mean, with the jockey, they're just going to keep going. I mean, they'll go to the other end of the level.
Right.
It's pretty scary.
I'll be really interested to play as one of those. I want to know if the jockey has any actual control over where the survivor is, you know, is going. If you're actually like a jockey on a horse, if you're like spurring him in one direction or another.
Mm-hmm. I like to think there's some control, because otherwise, I mean, the AI might just kind of lead it into a wall or something. I'm not sure how the pathfinding would handle it, but I don't know if you remember, Dan, when we were up there for our original cover story, they said, you know, we were thinking about doing a smaller infected character, and, you know, how could we do that and still make him visible? And he is sort of like this hunched over, like crawling on all fours kind of guy, and he stands out nicely, but he's not too small. He's not like a mouse or anything. He's more, I don't know, dog-sized or something, probably, you know, bigger than a dog.
So is he a mutated short guy, like a mutated horse jockey?
Yeah, that's probably fair to say. Okay. I'm not sure if that's his exact character.
But he's not a mutated dog.
Right.
No, I'm looking at a screenshot right now. He has really long arms, but his legs do look super short.
Mm-hmm.
He's a hideous mutant freak. A carny, if you will.
Yes. So, Evan, how do you feel about clowns? Because that seems really creepy, and I know a lot of people, myself included, are just kind of weirded out by clowns in general. And so zombie clowns just sounds like terrifying.
Oh, heaven.
Well, if it makes you feel better, you can shoot them, and they come apart pretty nicely. So,
yeah, how cathartic, right? Aren't you excited about that?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Was there anything new and exciting with the dismemberment mechanics? I mean, that's one of the things that really stood out to me when we were doing the initial story on it. Was the first time we played through, is you could shoot zombies in the arm or the leg, and or mostly the arm, and the arm would come off and they'd keep coming at you. Did they change anything there?
You know, it seemed, you know, maybe subtly refined. The one thing somebody was telling me that I was having a conversation with, I can't confirm this because it wasn't my in-game experience, but they blew a hole through the stomach of a zombie. And then they tried shooting that same area and they missed because they went through and it didn't detect. I can't confirm if that's the case, but that would be cool if it was. I mean, it's a great system. It adds a lot of visual feedback. The one thing I was looking for that was missing in that sense was tanks and special infected that, you know, show very obvious signs of damage that wasn't in. And I know Valve is planning that. So
cool.
Yep. And real quick, the other game that stood out at PAX for me, Global Agenda. We did a nice preview on this earlier in the year. It's a Unreal 3 third-person MMO, sort of in the vein of Tribes and TF2 at the same time, very futuristic. And Andy Salisbury, MaxBlendPC.com blogger, former PC Gamer intern, was watching me play it, and I was just having such a blast. They have a push, basically a payload type map in the game. That's, you know, if you've ever played TF2, if you played the Gold Rush map, if you played Badwater Basin, where basically there's an objective on a track and one team has to push it to the end of the level by standing next to it. They sort of have that exact same design. But imagine doing that with, you know, in a larger space. Characters have jetpacks, characters have energy weapons, and there's more turrets. There's just, I'm just really looking forward. We were talking about this with Section 8 last week. I mean, Global Agenda really recaptures the kind of feeling of being in a multiplayer game that's meant for that, you know, 30 so player cap, I guess. It just kind of fits that kind of frenetic feel, and it's class-based and wonderfully colorful and interesting, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's definitely back in my radar.
Did you get a chance to see the Knights of the Old Republic? Or the Old Republic, rather?
I didn't see the demonstration. That was on, I think that was, I had an interview or something while I was doing that. But, I mean, in terms of what was on the floor, we had already seen that stuff before. So, and Star Trek was playable, and that was cool. A lot of people are getting a kick out of that. What we saw, there's some cool new phaser rifles in there, Dan.
Cool.
And, yeah.
Yeah, when we played, they just had the one phaser rifle style in there, pretty much. So it's good to see they've got some more visual variety.
Well, fantastic. I'm glad. Thank you for the report, and I'm glad you were able to make it back intact. and I hope you'll be around at least for several minutes. You're already looking better, kind of, I think.
That's good.
He's still got that fleshy pink, peachy color, you know, and not the gray sort of aluminum foil thing that you want to, when you see that, you want to turn around as fast as you can.
Yeah, and as far as we can tell, there's been no diarrhea in that during that whole talk.
Yeah. What was it called again? Wait. Don't. That was awful. Speaking of Left 4 Dead, we couldn't help but overhear that not everybody will be getting the Crash Course DLC for free. Unfortunately, if you played on the Xbox 360, they will be charging, $7 for it or something like that? And that, Valve explains, is a direct result of Microsoft's influence, right? They said you had to pay for it for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, the Microsoft has you know, a long history of like forcing people to charge for DLC. I know for previous stuff that Valve has done, Microsoft has wanted them to charge for it. I think actually with Orange Box, like, they didn't get a bunch of the updates, right, Evan? Because Microsoft wanted them to charge for it, and Valve didn't want to put them out one at a time and charge for them little bits at a time. They figured they'd bundle them together. I think I recall reading something about that.
That's correct. I'm not even sure if the 360 has received any class updates. And I know within the same interview, actually, Chet from Valve mentioned that they would want them to charge for TF2 stuff. And sort of the explanation Chet gives is Microsoft wants to give this idea of like an economy of value within their service. Like, everything has value, everything is... I'm not sure how to interpret that, but do you guys buy into that concept?
Well, no. I mean, they just don't want to set a precedent for giving stuff away for free.
Yeah, because,
once you do that, once Valve does it, then every other company on there, people start looking at them and go, well, why aren't you doing what Valve's doing? So if they don't set that precedent, then, then they're basically forcing people to, or, you know, promoting... charging on there, and they get a piece of everything that's on there. And I guess that's kind of fair because Microsoft is paying for the bandwidth, but on the other hand, every Games for Windows Live subscriber, or not Games, sorry, Xbox Live subscriber is paying them $50 a month.
Yeah.
Or $50 a year.
You know, and the whole value thing. I mean, I think what they're talking about really is that every time Valve releases something for free, you know, Valve's sort of brand value goes up and Microsoft stays the same, and they'd probably rather not see that happen.
Yeah. And I mean, DLC is like the big new revenue thing that everybody wants a piece of. So I think they just want to get people used to paying for DLC and don't want to break that habit.
See, the thing that confuses me though is, I mean, most companies are going to charge for their DLC anyways because it costs money to produce it. But Valve, you know, is one of the rare ones, you know, that wants to give it away for free. Why not let the very few companies that do want to give it away for free give it away? And then the companies, you know, that want money will charge for it, and you can get a slice of that.
And it's probably just consistency. I mean, we can't really speak for Microsoft here, but that's my theory.
Yeah. Well, it makes me happy to be playing TF2 on a PC. That's for sure.
As well as
Although I think I have to admit, I got a bigger eye roll out of the whole, we flew the Left 4 Dead boycotters up to Valve and...
Oh my word. That picture.
Yeah. That picture is very haunting. You can see the picture of Gabe Newell with his arms around the two of the Left 4 Dead, boycotters that they flew up to Valve. And he's got a big old grin and a really mysterious stain right across his torso.
It's really weird.
It is very,
very disturbing.
Yeah, and yeah, so they flew a couple of guys up and
see, the guy's look on his face on the left is what disturbed me the most. Like, he looks threatening, like he's like just and he's holding some sort of metal or something. I don't even know. It's weird.
There's not a lot of charm in the picture at all. It doesn't seem to have done a whole lot. They're like, yeah, the game looks great, but we're still pissed off. And it's like, good Lord.
They've gone from looking irrational to looking like hypocrites, because now they've got quotes of them saying there's no question about the game's quality. You know, it doesn't look like a rush job. It looks great. But we still want it to be free.
Yeah.
I mean, they look petulant at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to like speculate too much on Valve on this, but I would not have done this if I was Valve or I was the person making the decision. I mean, is it fair to say you legitimize the way they're expressing their concerns by doing this?
It is kind of like, you know, negotiating with terrorists at that point.
Yeah.
because I not calling them terrorists, but saying that using, they basically getting this big group of people together, fueling this, you know, little outburst of outrage and, you know, just being kind of a rabble rouser really over something that they're now saying it was never a big deal to begin with. You know, it just kind of encourages copycat behavior.
It just really, it really frustrates me in that same sense that by being the loudest, most annoying voice for me, I view them as annoying and kind of whiny and a lot of their claims are unjustified. Then you get the most special access to the game other than press.
Well, yeah, I think Valve was hoping just to turn something that was becoming more acrimonious and negative and just say, hey, you know, let's just see if we can turn this around. And it turns out, well, no, they're still kind of petulant. And I probably would have done it as well. I would have thought that...
Would have done what?
Blown them up, you know, and just said, let's see if we can turn something that's becoming more and more negative into something positive by getting people excited about what we're doing rather than so focused on one aspect, which is just... the delivery and the price, you know, but they turned out to be annoying.
I don't know. I think that you know, people had kind of forgotten about these guys. I forgot about them. I mean, we only covered them because we thought they were funny.
Yeah. But fans are important to Valve. They're really important to Valve.
Well, Logan, we're kind of losing your voice there for some reason.
Fans are important to Valve. Very important to Valve, you know, so.
Yeah, but these guys are a small number of fans, and you know I went on a little rant like a month or two ago about how like these guys weren't going to see anything like before release that was going to make a big difference. I mean, the game would have come out, these guys would have played it, they would have had the exact same reaction, except it would be right when it comes out. It doesn't seem to make any sense to me for Valve to fly these guys up.
Well, there is such a thing as listening to feedback too much, right?
Yeah, definitely. And especially like a lot of developers have said they've made a mistake by listening too much to their hardcore fans, catering too much to those guys, and thereby, kind of making a game less accessible to the average player.
I think it would have made epic viral advertising marketing if they disappeared, the two guys.
I do think we should clarify though that we are not saying that nobody should ever be upset about a game, about the way people are treated in a game. We're not saying that you shouldn't boycott a game that you feel is unfair. These guys are just kind of whiners.
You should love all games because they're special.
Okay, I am very upset about something else, however. Have you remember Don't Copy That Floppy, the old anti-piracy thing video from a billion years ago? Well, now they've done a Don't Copy That Floppy 2. Oh yes. And you can just sort of Google that one, and you can even get it free off iTunes.
They're still very concerned about the copying of floppy disks, are they?
Yes. Well, no, it's Don't Copy That 2, I think is what they're calling it now. And it's got the original wrapper from the first one. And it's got, it opens with kids watching the original one going, look at that. That's so outdated. Meanwhile, their friend is actually copying discs, burning a bunch of discs. And of course, who's the criminal in this video? Watch for yourself on iTunes. It is the Asian. That's so unbelievably racist. It just makes my blood boil right out of my veins and comes spraying out of the corners of my eyeballs.
You mean your pirate Asian blood?
Yes. It's so outrageous. Did you notice that in the video, the only person committing crimes is... Go ahead.
Wait, dude. You're Asian?
The Asian.
No, I'm just kidding.
It just burns me up. I guess we're all criminals. But it is a sort of, interesting video.
Is it supposed to be like real, or is it kind of like a parody?
Well, it's kind of a it begins as sort of like a tongue-in-cheek thing on how outdated the first video was, but the piracy is still a problem, which is true, you know. And, you know, it's lighthearted. There are Klingons, just so you know. Todd Holland's head is in there. And you even get a peek at Rage running on a screen. Because Todd Holland's head is looking over somebody's shoulder as they're working on Rage at the moment. And yeah, and the rap is just about, you know, don't, you know, remember that, you know, piracy is bad. And, you know, I can understand that. All well and good. Although at the end there is a weird kind of bit where the guy's in jail or whatever. I didn't quite get that. But hey, it's free on iTunes and everybody loves a free video. I just, you know, wanted to speak out against the characterization of Asians as chronic disc burners.
It's very noble, Logan.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Somebody's got to speak up. Somebody's got to say, you lie. You know what I mean? That's what I'm saying.
Yep.
Now, a fantastic alternative to piracy, ladies and gentlemen, would be paying $5 for games, which you can do for a while now on Direct to Drive, where they have a quite a special going on. It's pretty impressive. It's their, what, fifth anniversary. Mm-hmm. So the digital distributor, I could have said it, Dan, and I didn't.
I appreciate it.
Is offering 50 games over the next 5 weeks. So 10 games for the next 5 weeks, 10 different ones each week for $5 a piece. And there are some good ones over there, right? The first batch is already out. It includes like Splinter Cell Chaos Theory, Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter 2, Civ 4, the complete XCOM bundle, which includes like, what, 50,000 different XCOM games.
Well, there are four or five, and only one or two of those is worth buying anyway. So.
Yeah.
And thanks for the enthusiasm there. I'm trying to pump it up here.
Get the first. The first two are well worth $5. All right.
Thank you. Gotcha.
Five games in that.
And Far Cry, which is always great. And then you can play mods forever and ever. So, and then week two is going to be action games. Week three, RPG MMO. Week four, indie games. And week five, war games. So it's a cool chance to pick up on some stuff you might have missed before for almost no money.
Yeah, Civ 4 for $5 is a steal.
Right. $5. But I can't really vouch for the Direct to Drive service. Has anyone else used it ever?
I've never used it.
It's fairly good. I had a problem once with my Rainbow Six Vegas key, and they were able to solve it for me. Immediately.
Oh, good.
I mean, so from what I've, you know, dealt with their service, it's been very positive.
Oh, fantastic. Good. That's good to hear something good about it. Because, you know, sometimes we get letters sometimes, but you generally only hear from people when they're having problems.
Right. But see, I had a slight problem, and they fixed it.
Yeah, which that's terrific, because usually nobody writes in to go, you know, hey, I loved this service, or they did just what they said they would do. You know, so it's good to know. It's good to hear something positive about the service, because
it's kind of interesting about the sale. They're selling, putting different games on sale in the UK than the US, and the UK list is terrible.
Really?
Wah, yeah.
I mean, they do have Civ 4, but they have like Sid Meier's Railroads and Empire Earth 2.
They really like railroads. I mean, how do you know they don't? So.
But it's like a 4-game list, man. Sucks.
Here's a UK haha for you. Apparently, you know, the law that you can't sell mature games to anyone under 18 in the UK was just rendered invalid.
Yeah, and like has been since something like 1984.
Yeah, because it was basically, it's an administrative error. They didn't report something to whatever. They didn't do something procedurally correct. And so now, you know, they're saying any prosecution that's already taken place is fine. But anything in the courts now or in the future is invalid until they fix whatever the problem is, which is kind of funny. But, you know, God knows how many souls have been, you know, are going to be lost as a result. you know, of this little brouhaha. In other news, there's a new NVIDIA-branded version of Stardock Impulse that you can download that will automatically keep your graphics drivers updated, which is a fantastic thing because I always forget to do that, you know, before I install something new. And it just almost always seems to fix so many problems. So that is always good news, something that does it automatically for you. And now they just need one that also defrags your hard drive every week, which you should do, all of you.
You know, here's what I don't get about...
I've got like
about
10 hard drives, dude.
Defrag them all. Get off your butt.
Here's what I don't understand about NVIDIA, you know, branding a version of Impulse to do this for you. NVIDIA already has, you know, a pretty hefty driver application yeah. to handle that. Why don't, and it runs in your system tray. So why don't they just build in a monthly check for driver updates for that?
I don't know, but I have a feeling it's because they think they would get blamed for any problems that happen as a result, whether or not it's just a coincidence that problems happened coincidentally with the installation of new drivers, but I don't know why they wouldn't shy away from this co-branding thing then.
Yeah, it's like this. If they're afraid of that, yeah. they wouldn't.
Yeah, so I can't kind of reconcile.
Probably
that.
Like a patent thing from Microsoft. They own the patent to automatically download updates and stuff.
No, because Apple does it with iTunes every time I launch. Every time I launch iTunes, it checks for a new version.
They gotta pay bad royalties.
I don't know how they got away with it, but somehow they finally slipped Safari 4. Under my radar and stuck it on my PC.
Oh,
yeah, every time you want to do an update, it has that box checked.
I always look for it and I always uncheck it, but I think they had it
double
under the
negative.
Scroll window, and I didn't scroll down and see that it did, because they separated it with text probably. So I thought, oh, that's the end of the list of the software, because they always up the ante every time. It's really nauseating.
They do the double negative check. Do you not want Safari?
Oh,
yes.
That's I'd be delighted to hear from some questions from our listeners.
You know, just real quick, I did have NVIDIA. I did have NVIDIA and a new NVIDIA driver break something for me. Because I had in my machine, I had a GTX 8500. And then I wanted a third display. I have a projector that I like to run off of a third display. So I needed another port. So I installed a 8500 GT, which is a really low end card. But it was just running a secondary display. So when I updated my NVIDIA drivers, the driver looked at that 8500, and I guess they had pushed that off the list of cards that support PhysX. So it looked at that 8500 and turned off PhysX across the board, which was driving me nuts, because it had been working and then it stopped. I told NVIDIA about that, and they know about it now. So I guess they might fix that in an upcoming version of the driver, where, you know, it looks at the best card in your system and not just looks at a card that's not compatible with PhysX and switches the whole system off. But yeah,
lost everybody's sympathy when you said the problem had something to do with using your projector as a third display.
Yeah,
that's like hearing an actress talk about, you know, I don't know why I'm paid so much money, but it's so hard to know. So let's hear some Q&A.
Hey there, PC Gamer Podcast. Dirk McWoo from Sandy, Oregon, where there's always snow to ski on here, just up on the hood, and there's always an invitation to Andy Bauman to come hang out and ski on the snow over here. Hey, I just wanted to come clear, because like for the last couple of years, Logan has been saying he just eats ginger. He doesn't eat ginger. No, if you've ever taken a bite of ginger, yeah. Grab ginger root from the supermarket, take a bite, you see what happens. Mm-hmm. You eat pickled ginger. Big difference there. Alright, guys, you have a great time. Thank you so much for the podcast. Love it.
Bye. Wow, what a challenge.
Rebuttal.
How dare you, sir? If you were here, I would take my gloves off. If you were here and I were wearing gloves, I would take them off and smack you across the face. Because I do, in fact, eat raw ginger right off the root. I keep it, in fact, in my refrigerator. I also have some...
What happens when you do?
Some knots of it in the freezer, but that's even more unpleasant. It's not pleasant. I'm not saying that it is. It's very strong. It's generally, I will like just shave off a little bit and just chew a little bit. The thing is, I don't like to eat sugar. I don't like sweetened things. So, yeah, I just deal with it. My eyes do water. Sometimes I openly weep. Wow. But I just deal with it, you know, because it does really help. And it's interesting that you brought that up, because I just did something called Barfmark 2009. And that's going to be in our December issue, where I test all these different anti-nausea remedies for gamers. And there are very, very surprising results in there. But you know what? Like I've said it before, and I'll say it again, ginger is a very effective thing. And I find chewing raw ginger, as awful as an experience as it can be, it's much more effective than the sugared ginger gum or ginger flavored candies. But pickled ginger is a much more palatable answer. Candied ginger is more palatable. But again, it's not that the flavor of ginger is so awful. It's just, it's so strong. It just, you feel like you're, you know, it's like a little grenade of flavor going off in your mouth.
So can also, you eat that after you're already nauseous, or do you have to kind of do it ahead of time?
You should do it ahead of time. It will help a lot more than if you do it after. Yeah, if you do it after, it just sort of mitigates the symptoms. But if you do it before, it can actually prevent them or give you a longer, like, heads up to stop gaming.
Also, the Oregon tourism industry extends its thanks for that plug.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't compare to Utah snow, but whatever.
Oh,
just kidding, I come.
All I can tell him is, dude, man up and start chewing.
Hey, guys, this is Mark from Atlanta. Got a question for you. I'm planning on upgrading my PC here pretty soon. I've got a 7800 GTX in the one that I'm using, and I was looking for a video card that would be less than $200. I was looking at the 9800 GTXs, which has a gig of RAM on board, but I was wondering if you guys might have a better suggestion or if you thought that was a good option. Let me know, and keep up the good work. Bye.
4870?
Absolutely. And those are running really, really cheap right now.
That's the ATI.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think it'll drop sooner with the 58 series coming out soon?
Yeah, but I never ask people to wait. I just never think that's a good idea, because prices always drop. They will always drop. And at most, you know, you'll be stinging for like $30 or $40. Big deal. You know, it beats waiting, because you'll be waiting for the rest of your life. Prices will always, always drop. And, you know, eventually you're going to upgrade in a couple of years anyway, you know, if you're a hobbyist.
But you can also get a GTX 260 for around $200 too.
Cheap already?
Yeah.
I thought those were...
No, I'm looking at Amazon right now. I searched for it. There's an EVGA GeForce GTX 260, 896 megabytes.
Oh, my God.
$184.
The man is right.
The man is right.
Holy free. Holy, it's true.
Damn the man.
So, yeah.
Fight the man.
Wow, let me... Well, I put in 4870. I'm looking at push-up bras. Why? it's dealer part 4870. Costabella Soiree push-up bra. I swear to God.
Oh, my gosh.
For $63 at Bare Necessities, B-A-R-E, but you knew that.
It's also
if you search for a Radeon. If you search for a Radeon 4870,
well,
you know.
I was in a hurry.
160 to. Well, no, I guess there's 135 to 180. Looks like.
Yeah, but if it's that close, I'd go for the 260.
Yeah.
Definitely. All right. Next question. No, not the push-up bra.
What's up, PC Gamer Podcast? This is Chris Flinton, a.k.a. Frick from Fargo, North Dakota. Coming up is a very auspicious occasion. You're reaching your 200th episode. Congratulations on that, by the way. However, my question is, and I mean no disrespect to anybody currently on the PC Gamer Podcast, Evan or Andy, and I still listen to you guys every week. However, I have been around since episode one, and I was just wondering, what is the possibility of getting a retrospective podcast together with the original cast? Dan Morris?
I had a guy in front of me that I shot with a shotgun, you know, turned the street sweeper on him. Blew his arm right off.
Norman Chan.
You die a lot more often. Kills become easier.
Jeremy Williams.
I gotta save up my 70 gold to get it, though. I don't know if I'm gonna have it in time.
Greg Viederman.
You seem to be throwing a lot of, you know, tanks and buses and things of that nature.
And we can't forget Dan Stapleton as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm never going to complain about a free game.
So what do you guys think? A retrospective podcast for the 200th episode with the original crew and the new guys? I think it would be an excellent idea.
If anything, is it possible to just get an update as to what those guys are doing? I was also wondering, since there's a lot of mention questions that come in about people wanting to get into the video game industry, either by graphic design or programming or something along that line. However, I'm currently a double major in both computer science and music industry with emphasis on audio production. And I was wondering, how would someone get into the video game industry doing sound, either recording voices, composing music, or doing sound effects? Any information would be great. Thank you guys. Love the podcast and have a great day.
Wow. That guy has an amazing radio voice.
No wonder why his question sounds better than everybody else's.
He came at me so professionally, I almost forgot to be offended.
Well, dude, let's see. Should we tackle
first
these
of
in
all,
order?
I apologize for not being as cool as those guys. And I was a listener since episode one as well.
What state does he come from?
Fargo.
That's not Fargo. A state.
North Dakota.
Unfortunately, you can't marry any of these guys you think are so cool. but I'll certainly let them know that you're interested.
All right. So in the order in which they were received, we can try to get a few of those guys on, but we can't promise it because they are all very busy. We can tell you what they're all doing right now. Dan Morris is working at EA. He's I believe he's in some kind of product development. I always forget his title.
It's a business
development. That's right.
Like taking stuff they have already and making new business out of it.
Yeah, we don't really know what that means, but that's what he does. Greg Viderman is at Ubisoft. He's in their marketing department. What he does is when you buy like a graphics card, and you get games with it. He's the guy that goes to graphics card makers and says, "Hey, do you want to bundle some of our games with your graphics card? We'll sell those to you." So that's what he's doing. Norm Chan is at Maximum PC. You can find him there.
He's on their podcast every week.
He is.
Sorry.
I heard a gunfire.
Yeah, I didn't. Sorry. It was, I'm sorry.
Just because he forgot you don't need to kill yourself, Logan. It's not worth it.
Yeah, put it done.
Jeremy Williams is working down the hall at Core, at the PlayStation 3 network doohickey. It's a video show if you haven't seen that. Did I cover everybody?
Well,
I guess Chuck would be... He didn't mention Chuck.
He didn't mention Chuck. But although Chuck never really liked to do the podcast very much, he was on a few times. But
Chuck was great, though, at the podcast.
Yeah. We always prodded him to do it more. He's still at Future. He's working at Future Plus downstairs with Josh now.
Yeah, he's actually just a couple desks away from me.
Yeah,
we hang out all the time. I bet he's Fargo man is jealous now.
So he does.
I'll bet. Yeah.
Chuck is in charge of, among other things, the Envision magazine that Future does in partnership with NVIDIA.
Yeah, oh,
and I guess the other part of the question.
Where's Dan Stapleton? Oh, wait, he's still here?
Yeah. What?
Yeah. Can't seem to get rid of that guy. The other part of the question was how to get into the industry with sound effect development. That's a
terrific question.
It is a good question, but I mean, without knowing specifically, these sound guys are doing the exact same job as you know, sound guys in other industries. So I imagine it's just a matter of submitting your resume and portfolio and some samples of your work. You just check websites of local game companies. I don't know if there are a whole lot in Fargo, but check for. I've seen a bunch of job postings for sound designers or sound engineers. For gaming companies. So I would imagine that if that's your skill set, that's a pretty easy way to get in the industry. And again, I don't have any specific knowledge on that, never having tried.
I mean, it sounds like this dude has got some serious skills, though, because he's doing computer science, double major, and he could probably be like a really, really coveted asset in the industry for doing sound tools, like programming the tools for engines and implementation. Yeah.
You're right, that does sound like a valuable combination.
So, I mean, yeah, like you're going to be probably cherry-picked one of these days.
Well, if you want to break into any industry, the number one thing you need is perseverance and tenacity. That was two things. what I would do with the sound engineering stuff is, if it were me and I was just getting started, I would find any sound production company in my area, anyone, maybe they do production for commercials, maybe they do, voiceovers, maybe they do, post-production work for a TV station, who knows? And go there and say, hey, what can I do here? Like, clean the floor, intern for them, do something, get in the door and start meeting people. And then go, hey, you know what? Once you're in the door, you know, if you're interning for them, you know, you might have to work a day job or night job to pay the bills for a while, but you'll meet people and you'll say, you know what? This is actually what I really want to do. I want to work in the sound production department. I want to work, can I help you out doing masters, you know, recordings or all that stuff, you know, find people, meet people, you know, but for a while, you're going to have to do some grunt stuff.
Seduce
because it's all about, it's really all, industries like that are a lot about networking and just knowing, you know, building up a portfolio. And maybe even if you were to, to work for really cheap to do recordings or any kind of help, you know, at least you'll have a demo reel to show to when you first apply for a first professional job. You know what I mean? But just get out there, find sound production facilities in your area and go to their door and say, hey, what can I do? How can I help you? In terms of voiceovers, what I would do is record a demo reel. And then it's very, very, very hard to get any work without an agent. So find an agent in your area who does voiceovers, who represents voiceover at talent, and send him or her a demo reel. And if they don't like it, write them back and go, you know what? What didn't you like about it? What did I need to put in there? That's how I'd start there. Evan, you were saying something?
Oh, yeah. Just that a lot of people don't know. I did Coconut Monkey's laundry for like 3 months before I started working here. His laundry is made of wood.
That's gross.
It's made of wood.
I changed Jeremy's baby's diapers for like 3 weeks.
Yep.
Also, so.
And that's not pretty either.
No.
Yeah.
Very rice watery. You know,
but there's so many opportunities out there.
Oh, you had to throw that in there.
Had to be done.
The image was out of my mind, it came flooding back in.
Yeah, that was very harsh. So, you know, best of luck to you, you know?
You know, actually, I just remember reading something about a voiceover job that actually a former PR person for LucasArts was talking about how she just got her first voiceover work. Let's see. She got it through a voices.com audition.
Nice.
So I just went to the website. It is the number one voiceover marketplace for voiceovers and voiceover talent.
Hey, PC Gamer. This is Dave from New Hampshire with a question about setting up a new computer. My old computer is getting a little, old. And what I'd like to do is build a new one from scratch and set it up so it's easy to reload, easy to maintain and back up and so forth. I know you guys clean off your computers fairly often. You switch operating systems and so forth. I'm curious how you set them up, what you do to preserve your data. As always, I love the podcast. It's the first thing I listen to when it shows up. Keep it up.
Well, for me, the most of what I do is just copy the entire user folder out of the Windows directory. That's got virtually everything you need. Some of the folders in there are hidden, but when you copy it, it copies those as well. It can be a bit of a pain to go through and copy just what you need. There are utilities that'll do that for you, right?
Yeah. In fact, the Windows Easy File Transfer tool, you can download from Microsoft's website. We'll do that for you.
But doesn't that only work if you're transferring from one computer to another? Not if you're wiping off.
Oh, no, it can be for, you know, it'll archive to like another drive or disks or anything like that. And then you can put it back on the PC when you've like updated, like if you're doing a clean install.
Maybe I've been doing it wrong all these years, but you know, I've been doing it manually.
That's what I do as well. Like, in fact, on my computer at home, this is not a real practical solution for most people, but I have like a RAID array that has that duplicates all the data I have, so I don't have to worry about losing any data. And I put all my personal data on that drive, and I'm always reformatting my operating system drive.
Do you ever do a ghost kind of thing
absolutely.
I've never done that.
Yeah, that's where it's imaging your drive, where right after you've finished setting up your new OS and you've tweaked it and you've made all, you know, you've, you've, you know, made all your adjustments and even, you know, set your desktop wallpaper, then you make an image of the drive, a copy of it. And if anything happens later, you can just blow off all the, you know, all your disk and just wipe it clean and then install the new image. But the problem is you have to reinstall all your games, reinstall all your applications, and that can get to be a drag.
Well, that's true of any reinstall, though.
Yeah. System restore, you know, so is what people use mostly these days.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but it's still a time-consuming process, and there aren't a whole lot of shortcuts when you're starting from scratch. Shall we take one more?
Yes.
Nice.
This is Dan from the Quad Cities, Illinois. And my question this week is actually whether you think that the game Section 8 is going to be a good replacement for people that used to play Tribes 2 or Tribes, even the Tribes the original. I don't think that Tribes 3 was great. It bothered me. So I'm looking for a game that is going to give me that same kind of action. And I mean, I tried the Battlefield 2142 thing, thinking maybe some sort of futuristic team play game would kind of quench my thirst for more Tribes, but didn't really do the trick. So I'm wondering if Section 8 will be the game that hopefully meets that for me. I'm just kind of curious what your thoughts were on that. Thank you very much.
Now, I know that this was recorded some time ago, so I'm guessing that the bomb already went off.
I was thinking that it was like mind control device going in there.
Did we just get programmed?
Yeah, because I was my head's starting to hurt here.
Yeah. I did just finish sending all my money to that guy, so I wonder if that has anything to do with it.
We were all on PayPal. Yep. I don't know why.
Transfer funds? What?
Sorry, where were we?
I don't know.
we answered this question last week, honestly. I don't know if it's an older question, but...
No.
Oh, well, we talked about it last week. Go listen to last week's podcast.
Yeah, I believe I asked that specific question. Do you think it'll be a good replacement or a good update for Tribes or a successor to Tribes?
Yeah.
And I believe you said not really.
Probably not, but the good news is Global Agenda almost definitely will be. I would rush to check that out. Check out their website. Check out video footage. I mean, they're an independent developer you can sort of root for at the same time, and they're just really passionate about putting out a game that has some of those same... team-focused mechanics. It's not Tribes exactly. It's not a spiritual successor or anything like that, but it will remind you of Tribesy wonderful things.
Tribesiness.
Tribesiness.
It's like truthiness, except with Tribes.
Exactly.
Okay, well, we've got to go and reassign our 401ks to this guy after our playlists. For me, it couldn't be easier. Every time, no matter what I intend to do when I get home, whether it's watch a movie, hang out with friends, play with a cat, eat dinner, doesn't happen. It's Batman Arkham Asylum. All day, every day.
It is a very addictive game.
We
can't talk too much about it yet because it's not out yet, but it comes out on the 15th, and it's just very addictive. I have that same thing. I get kind of stuck playing the challenges over and over again, trying to rack up a high score. But
are you guys playing with a gamepad or with mouse and keyboard?
Mouse and keyboard.
I decided to play with a gamepad.
Okay.
I'm not into Batman. I never was. I thought the movie was a snooze. I never would have thought. Yeah, yeah. I said that. The movie was boring.
Okay, Logan also hates America.
Hold on. Did you ever watch the animated series?
No.
Oh.
Oh. Well.
What? Some dude in tights. I mean, they do it in my neighborhood all the time. Big deal.
You're just jaded, man.
And the movie was just like it was okay. It was loud but. Everyone was all like, oh, it was so deep, and finally the great story. No, it was just, what, you know, dude, Joker, whatever, explosion.
Oh, Logan.
It was all right. But this game is just amazing, absolutely amazing. I cannot stop playing it. It even broke me of my whole Resident Evil, thing so far. I broke away from that just, and I can't stop. And Dan, how about you?
Well, let's see. Besides that, I've still been playing with some gratuitous space battles. Starting to get the hang of that a little bit. Again, that's a little indie game that's made by, I believe, Positech Games. You can just search for gratuitous space battles. It'll pop right up. And it's a one-man project. It's kind of a big space battle simulation. All the gameplay is in setting up your fleet. You get to design your own ships, like their weapon loadout and armor and shields, engines and power supply and crew and everything. So it's kind of a thinly veiled spreadsheet, really, because you're just, filling in the slots on there with values and then you place them on a 2D battle map and, give them like behavioral orders, not specific like RTS orders like go attack this guy, but orders like attack ships that are already damaged or defend this ship. And then you push go and the battle plays out. And it's a lot. I've always been somebody who just really likes watching really cool space battles. And I played with Star Trek Bridge Commander for way longer than I would have if it didn't have like the ability to set basically the battle on autopilot and go into the cinematic mode and just watch it. So I just love doing that. And this does that, except all the gameplay is already done, and then your reward is an epic battle. So I'm liking it. The interface is a little bit wonky, a little bit thick, hard to get through, but it's not quite done yet. It's still in beta. But if you pre-order it, you can get the beta. Other than that, not a whole lot.
How about you, Evan?
Oh, not too much, because I've been in bed all day. Norm's making me get back in Arma later tonight on our server. He lent me the Logitech.
Noobs allowed?
Noobs are allowed, absolutely. If you're available tonight, yeah, please hit me up on Steam. He lent me the new Logitech G940 flight system.
Is it a hot ass?
Oh, I beg your pardon?
I don't know what that means.
Whoa.
It has pedals and a throttle. And
I think that's what it means.
Amazing.
If that's what you're into.
I think that's a HODAS.
I'm really confused by... Is that an acronym? Like,
I think
what
so.
What are you saying?
Andy Mahood would totally know what I'm saying.
There is a world of discomfort there.
Yeah. Evan, he's basically complimenting your posterior.
Yeah.
He's saying it's nice and round. And
Give it a little shake.
Yeah.
That's right.
I can't see.
No. I'm in no mood, Andy. But other than that, I did find a way to crawl out of bed and play Team Fortress 2 last night, and got some excellent Kritzkrieg assistance from my friend the Typer.
I got some too, actually. It was quite
was also
nice.
A listener. Yeah, that's right. When I was dead, he was helping you out. No, but that was a blast. And real quickly, I just wanted to say thanks to the guy at PAX. I don't remember his name. I'm not even sure if he gave me his name. I'm sorry.
Patient Zero.
Patience here. Not quite. No, I was in the lobby area and I was checking out some board game, and he came up and said hello and said that he loved the podcast and magazine and whatnot. Just really nice guy wearing a Champions Online t-shirt, and didn't get a chance to thank him properly. So
was he carrying a sickle?
there's no sickle in view.
Okay, I'm just long black robe. No. Okay, just check it. And how about you, Josh? What have you been up to?
I'm thinking I'm going to have to try and sneak around here before I have to head back downstairs, see if I can steal a copy of Batman. But I haven't gone to bed before like 2 o'clock this week, all because of League of Legends. I'm playing it even more than I think I played Demigod, like when I was really into it. It is just really fun. And I've been playing Evelynn a lot, the little sneaky rogue, stabbing people in the back. And so I'm a little nervous because I'm worried that they're going to take like my favorite champions and make those the ones you have to pay to play. So I'm a little anxious to see which ones are going to be the free ones and which you have to pay for. But
yeah.
I am
loving
it.
You played some Heroes of New Earth too, right?
I just played one round of it. Yeah.
Which what was your impression? Those are two very similar games. What were your initial impressions, I should say?
Heroes of New Earth is very initial impression. So, I mean, I know a ton of people. I know a lot of Dota fans really prefer Heroes of New Earth over League of Legends. I never really played Dota a whole bunch. Every time I did, people yelled at me, and it was just not fun. So Heroes of New Earth seemed like an exact Dota clone. They took Dota and just made it a standalone game, whereas League of Legends kind of took the gameplay and said, okay, this is basically the gameplay. How can we tweak it a bit to make it a little more fun? How can we change some of the interface to make it more practical? And it's a little more different, but to me, I really enjoyed it. I love the humor in it. Where Heroes of New Earth, just right off the bat, everything was very serious. It's like hardcore. Where League of Legends, you know, you have the crying mummy and the pirate ship, and they just added the... It has a sense of humor and a personality. Where Heroes of New Earth just felt very, you know, stone-faced. Like, I'm going to play this game because I'm a tough pro gamer.
Yeah, and I played a little bit of Heroes of New Earth. I don't know, it was... I'm so used to Demigod, it was like there are just too many layers of extra stuff that I don't want to worry about. But again, it's probably just because I'm too used to Demigod.
Did the Heroes of New Earth item shop have it where you could, because you know how you can combine items, could you just buy like the finished product, or did you have to buy each of the individual items and like put them together?
I had to buy each individual item, but that might be because I'd never had that much money.
Okay. Yeah, because the item shop in League of Legends is beautiful. The way they do it is just so elegant, and it makes it so easy. Where I've heard a couple people complain about Heroes of New Earth, that it's still as complicated as it was in Dota.
It's pretty complicated. It's like, I don't really want to deal with this. I don't want to spend half an hour looking at my store. I want to go and fight. You know?
Evan, I've had someone ask me if you were playing League of Legends too, because I wanted to get in there with you, because I've been giving out beta invites on Twitter. So have you been playing it? Only when you aren't deathly ill.
I actually haven't. I've barely spent any time in the beta. Partly because you and Max are just putting a ton of time in it, and it's usually in our interest to, you know, spread out what games we're covering. You know, what's popular at the same time. And I mean, you guys were doing a lot of work in it, so
yeah. No. All right. I could always use teammates if you guys want to play.
Besides, once somebody spent a lot of time in a game, and then you try and join in with them, you're the noob, and that's just eh.
Mr. Bauman, what have you been up to?
De-limbing tons and tons of Nazis in Wolfenstein.
Oh, yeah. Hey, what a game, huh?
I love it. I'm still...
What a game.
Yeah, like, the weapons make that game amazing. Like,
oh, yeah.
I've already talked about it. It's like, the way they feel is just great.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite enemy to kill?
I mean, honestly, it's just fun just to kill the normal Nazis, like the humans. I don't really like killing that.
Well, then you will love Inglourious Bastards.
I love the electrical guy with the fuses on top.
Yeah, I don't know if I like that because I'm like, oh, I just got to shoot these things off. And there's no gore. Yeah, like I want heads flying off.
Well, they explode in a like gigantic plasma fireball at the end. But yeah.
That's always good.
That is good.
It is scripted. But yeah, I was going to say that the foot soldiers too, Andy. I agree.
Yeah, it's like anything I have the extra power charm activated for is a good death.
It's what about the scientist though? He's always surprised when you could shoot through a shield. Oh, yeah. He's always like, "What the?"
Oh man, have you run into the
or the innocent? I should have said the innocent scientists. They're my favorite. Yeah,
they're pretty funny. No. But it's fantastic. I mean, Logan, you mentioned this because there's a lot of voice looping. That's one of the things. Like they repeat a lot of the voices.
Yeah.
You get in these situations with the foot soldiers where they're like, "What's wrong? Run out of bullets?" And then like either in between that. In the middle of that sentence, or right as they, you know, finish saying it, you answer their question with you know, a headshot or something. It's
splat.
They're like, no.
Now, do they actually here's stop for you in the middle of saying it? It's like, is it like, what's the matter? Does it stop or does it continue to play the voice?
You know, probably. I can't remember either way, honestly. Right.
Because one of my favorite things to do in the original Half-Life was to turn on cheat codes in the beginning and run around the scientists area just shooting those guys, because they start saying like, "You're not supposed to be here," and then you just "You're not supposed to," bam, and they just get cut off. That's the funniest.
There's a little Rorschach test for you with Dan Stapleton, personality profile.
I think my equivalent of that in Gary's mod, if you load any of the Half-Life 2 levels, I mean, sometimes certain things don't load correctly, but in most cases the scripting works. Just finding the G-Man and seeing him, you know, walk from point A to point B and just dropping cars on him and throwing him around, whatever.
Alrighty.
I guess before we wrap up, I wanted to just invite you guys and you know any listeners out there to play Darkest of Days, because like I enjoyed it. I've been seeing a couple of reviews out there that just did not like it at all, and I don't know, just reading over those is like I don't think they got it. I mean it's good. It's a very Call of Duty-esque game, and yes, it has some production problems in that. You know, it's not a really big budget game. The graphics aren't top notch, but the AI is dumb as a rock. But it's dumb in Call of Duty as well. But it's got some clever ideas, and I think it's definitely worth playing. I'm really interested to hear what you know somebody else thinks of it around here, because whenever I put out a review, then and it's got a high score, and everybody else. Or you know, a couple other people so far have bashed them. Like, am I crazy or are they? So I'd love to hear some more reactions.
Yeah, I read OXM's review and the review read positively, but then it had a slightly you know middle of the road score. It was a 6.
I can't wait to start playing it because it looks really cool.
One thing about that one though is make sure you don't turn PhysX all the way up because that will kill your frame rate. Mm-hmm. Put it on medium or high or whatever. Not the highest. The 1 second from highest.
So sort of physics-y.
It looks good. I mean, the physics stuff in that is pretty cool. There's a lot of swirling leaves and stuff. It adds to the atmosphere of like the Civil War battles.
Mm-hmm. That's the perfect description for one of the levels of the settings, Logan. Physics-y, what? Sort of physics-y.
Yeah.
So physics-y.
And or, not physics-y enough.
Or just like, no, like multiple physics. Many physics-es.
Well, physics-y ladies and gentlemen, this is Logan Decker, your podcast host, and I'm giving you a physics-y order to send us your questions in MP3 format to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. That's pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com, or just call us toll-free at 877-404-1337 at extension 724 and record your question there.
How come you can remember that number and I can't?
Keep it brief and clean. How can nobody remembers that part? Brief and clean. Now, actually, people have been doing really well. You can also subscribe to our awesome magazine by heading over to pcgamer.com and letting us know where we should send our fantastic issues to. We're also looking for gamers who crave instant fame by having their awesome screenshots and photos of their rigs and gaming setups printed in the magazine. Send them to letters@pcgamer.com. And you just might see your handiwork in the PC Gamer letters section and read the entire world over. I thought I just heard a typewriter.
Clackety clack clack.
I was popping bubble wrap.
Or a Glock.
For the PC Gamer podcast crew and the bubble wrap popper and the tiny squirrel who doesn't speak, this is a rock legend, Logan Decker, saying thanks for listening. We're looking forward to getting together with you, all of you, all over again next week. Thanks so much. Bye-bye. Fantastic. I just blanked, sorry. But I'm still here with all of you.
That's debatable.
Yeah. No, I'm here. Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Andy.
Welcome,
hey, gotta
Andy.
Go.
You're
I'm gonna
welcome.
Die.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Bauman.
Of course.
Mr. Bauman, will you take me home?
It's no problem.